Welcome back. My name is Casey Doran. Of course, this is Ask an Atheist, and we have us with us again, Russell Glasser. Russell.
Hi again.
Thanks for being here. We really appreciate it.
Thanks.
We have you on loan.
Great time on the show.
Awesome. Well, we just wanted to make sure to get some more time with you to monetize you sufficiently while you're here. And I think what's fascinating about the shows that we do, that they're very much in common. We've got a lot in common. But one thing that we stay away from an awful lot is because we're part of nonprofit organizations, I know that we sort of have to represent a perspective that is nonprofit. We have a tendency to stay away from having an overtly political stance. And so I'm kind of thinking, I've read a lot of your things on Daily Kos and some of the stuff on Kazim's Corner.
Okay.
And what I find interesting is that I think a lot of people are detractors, our underinformed detractors will say, well, you know, it's communists that are that are atheists, or at least liberals are atheists, or if they're atheists, they have to be liberal. There's this
there's this
confusion of like, well, if they're atheists, they must be liberal. But for me, as a philosophical position, which doesn't say much, atheism doesn't really say much. At the very least, you can say that it is, if it can be related to a sort of a political or ideological philosophy, it would be anti-authoritarianism, at the very least.
Sure, I'll go with that.
But beyond that, I don't see what else you could draw, a natural connection you could draw between a political ideology.
Do you want me to try to come up with one?
Sure, go ahead.
Bertrand Russell, who I was named after, actually, had an essay which was called Liberalism and the Colleges. And, you know, this was in the, I don't know, early part of the century. I don't want to pin it down to a date. But he was... he had a quote that I thought was interesting because, first of all, it's just a truism that that religious people have gravitated toward the right side of the political spectrum, right? So, I mean, you know, purely to be contrarian, it makes sense that atheists would head toward the left.
Right.
But what Bertrand Russell said gave me sort of what I felt was sort of the grand unifying principle between why there's this alliance, which he said basically the chief difference between liberalism and illiberalism is that one of them holds everything open to doubt.
Right.
And the other requires that certain things be regarded as sacred.
Right. Well.
And I agree with you that you don't have to be a liberal to be atheist, even though I am,
right.
and I'm not a communist. I've had some pretty serious arguments with people who want to go a lot farther in liberalism than I do.
Right.
But, I mean, I know atheist Republicans, and I know atheist libertarians.
Right.
They do tend to be a minority still. But I do think that conservatism, and this is just me speaking from my personal political perspective and not as a representative of the atheist
experience. Of course not. Of course.
I do think that conservatism has a sort of faith in the natural social order, like if you're rich, then you deserve to be rich.
Right.
It's sort of a new divine right of kings kind of thing.
Sure.
And, you know, it's not that I think that all people who are rich deserve to be broken down and made poor.
Right.
It's just that I think, you know, in order to preserve equal opportunity, there has to be some way of, you know, supporting and educating people who don't have so many advantages.
Gotcha. Well,
so that's my apology.
Okay, good. I'm glad we clarified that.
Okay.
Moving along, there was one thing that I'd actually read an awful lot, but I don't think you've ever expounded on it. This has nothing to do with the last question.
Okay.
What's the Star Trek analogy?
You haven't read the Star Trek rule?
I have not.
Okay, so I did an April Fool's joke a few years ago. Where there was this guy, Dan something, who kept, you know, it was a persistent Christian troll.
Right.
And I wrote, there were two of them actually, and I wrote, the atheist show is being turned over to Dan. As, you know, on April Fool's Day, I wrote this, and it's going to be called, like, the Dan Marvin / Rology Power Hour. Or Bible, you know, Power Hour.
Right.
And he being a fundamentalist doesn't have a sense of humor. So he came on and started saying, hey, I'm glad you've given me this platform to spout a bunch of Bible quotes. And so I was trying to figure out how to get through to this guy the next day and explain to him that these Bible quotes are a waste of time for us. Right. And I said, and I thought about it for a while before I actually tacked the name the Star Trek rule onto it. And what I said is, it's kind of like if somebody came at you and was obsessively quoting Star Trek episodes at you. So it would be like, you know, every single conversation you have, instead of using their own words, they quote, like, with episode number, James T. Kirk, as if that meant anything. And it's like, I like Star Trek, kind of. I'm not really a Trekkie, but, you know, I've seen a lot of episodes that I enjoyed of all the series except Deep Space Nine. I find really boring. but I don't take I don't take a line seriously just because it comes from Star Trek. Right. If I hear a quote and it makes sense on its own, then I'm like, huh, that's, you know, point for Star Trek. Good. But I'm not going to grant it special credibility because of where I came from. So I said to this guy, okay, next time you want to quote a Bible verse at us, think to yourself, would this line be just as convincing to you if it came out of James T. Kirk instead of, you know, Revelations?
That's good.
And if it doesn't sound as good when James T. Kirk is saying it, then maybe you ought to think of another way to make your point.
That's nice. That's
because very cool. Because we're just dumb atheists who don't automatically accept the Bible, so right. You're going to have to either put more energy into convincing us that the Bible is true first, or make a compelling argument that has nothing to do with the Bible.
And that illustrates that one central thing about, say, the difference between reading something from Plato and reading something from the New Testament, which is
right.
The New Testament, for it to be compelling, for you to need to believe it, it's larger ontological claims about what's happened. They actually have to be true. Like, Jesus has to have existed for his eschatology, you know, for Paul's eschatology to make sense. And whereas Socrates is not the case.
When you read Plato, you're free to read parts of it and say, okay, this sounds good, this is kind of iffy.
Right.
You know, but when you read the Bible, people are expecting you to give it automatic respect because it is the Bible.
Right.
And it doesn't deserve that respect. It deserves the same respect as Star Trek. It's good to the extent that it is compelling literature,
right.
And no more.
Right. I'll diverge. I'll have a non-segue. You, of some of your sort of solo stuff from what you've done has been about atheist evangelism. And I guess for someone like me who does, I mean, we do a show and we work really hard to do a show to try to get our perspective out there. Do you, and maybe with the recent sort of political leaning that just happened a couple weeks ago.
With the country leering back to the right.
Yeah. And us taking comfort, refuge in more conservative ideas. Where do you see the end of evangelism, of atheist evangelism? Because I know that you are someone who's advocated for being evangelists.
Well, you know, people accuse atheism of just being a negative philosophy where, you know, it's just a reaction to theism. It's like a rebellion. And I would say, you know, that's actually right, because if there weren't any theism, then there would be no point in calling yourself an atheist,
right.
Because there aren't really any a Santa Clausists. As much as we compare religion to Santa Claus, there aren't people out there who are actively doing what that congressman we talked about on the show is doing, where they're saying, well, I know this is right because it's in the Bible, or I know this is right because, you know, my Santa Claus storybook said so. Nobody is doing that. The reason that atheism is necessary as a movement is because there's so much, as the religious right likes to put it themselves, culture war that they started, as I see it.
Right.
And I think that atheists and also liberals... I'm going to continue to piss people off.
No, don't worry. We'll have a disclaimer blinking on the bottom here for you.
Speaking only for me, but I think they tend to want to be the reasonable ones, or they tend to be the reasonable ones. And part of being reasonable is actually listening to and considering an argument and thinking about where the other side might be right, and therefore compromising. And if and I absolutely think that that's a noble impulse, but at the same time, I think there's a misguided desire to not try to be sort of a hard ass about your point of view. Because, you know, the things I believe, I think are true. And I think it's important to be open to be proving wrong, to being proven wrong, but also, you know, be absolutely, like, recognize that you're in combat, basically. And be sort of in your face about it while being reasonable in other ways. I think.
So given the fact that we're in this constant battle and it's kind of they're kind of totalizing, right? The ideology is totalizing because someone who's a theist, this belief that they have has, it stretches out to many, many different things into many different areas. And as Mike had talked to Greta before, he said there's this difficulty in communicating because we represent the polar opposite. So I guess my question to you is, where is the middle ground to be had when our position says you are totally wrong? At least in liberals versus conservatives, you know, there are some things we can come over and there's just a disagreement about the means.
There are, but I mean, the thing is, I think it's a mistake to always be looking for the middle ground. I mean, that's a, you know, a Buddhist thing. or one of those Eastern religions, I can't remember. Actually, there's a kind of a joke I like to tell that kind of illustrates the point here, which is that two kids are at a bakery and they find a discarded cake in a dumpster. It's still a perfectly good cake. It was just, you know, made wrong and it was in a box. So they fish it out and one of them says, "Oh, this is perfect. I'm going to eat this whole cake." And the other guy says, you know, "Oh, that's not fair. You know, you should share and share alike. You know, we'll split the cake, half for you and half for me." And the first one says, "Nope, I want to eat the whole cake." So they argue for a while, and then this mathematician comes by and he's like, you know, "Hey, kids, I heard you arguing. What's the problem?" And one of them says, "I want to eat this whole cake." And the other one says, "I think we should share it 50-50. And so the mathematician says, "Gentlemen, I have a solution to your problem. Give him 3/4 of the cake." There is a point of view that we're trying to converge on in science that is actually right. And you can't, and just like we said in the show, you can't vote on gravity. Just because one side says that, you know, if you step off this building, then you will fall down and hurt yourself. And the other side says, if you step off this building, you will hover in midair. Just because there's two different points of view doesn't mean that the answer is halfway between them. And I think it's important to consider opposing arguments, but I don't think it's important to cede ground in the sense of moving away from a position that you think, after studying all the evidence, is probably right.
So what then is your stance sort of on the, it's been trumpeted in the last 6 months, about the don't be a dick directive? Where do you fall? I know some
be
of your colleagues,
you,
to be a dick.
Absolutely be a dick. I think we've actually had a lot of conversations about this recently on the Atheist Experience because, you know, we're dicks. and the thing is, we're most popular when we're dicks, because a lot of clips off the Atheist Experience, more people, I think, have seen the Atheist Experience through individual 10-minute clips on YouTube than have seen the whole show. And the ones that tend to get super amounts of hits and keep coming up on Reddit and have thousands of comments on them are the ones where we totally take some guy to task for having a clearly ridiculous opinion and we make fun of them for it. And then there's always people on the thread who say, you know, who say, "Oh, they're so mean, you know, they're hurting the atheist message." And it's like, well, it's not our fault that this one is popular, right? Also, when you think about not being a dick and whether it works or not, What are the people on the other side doing?
Yeah.
I mean, what are we moving towards? There are people who are there are people who are dickish Christians who are saying, you know, oh, atheists just love to sin and there's no reason not to kill people and they hate America and they say all kinds of things, but you don't hear a lot of people coming from their camp saying, guys, can you not be such dicks to atheists?
Yeah.
And, you know, when you get into liberal versus conservative access, liberals are also very worried about being dicks, but then who are the popular conservatives? Like, you know, Ann Coulter was popular for a while. Yeah. Rush Limbaugh is popular, you know, and what do they say? Those people are traitors.
Yeah.
You know, they hate America. They want to destroy you. Everything they do is for the purpose of bringing down America. And it's like, you know, they say stuff like that. And my response is, screw you.
Yeah. It almost seems like it should be answered in the same way that a Glenn Beck or a Rush Limbaugh would have such a strong attack. It would seem that it can't, the response can't always be, well, we just have a fundamental disagreement about that, you know, because sometimes it's so vociferous that it has to be shouted down.
I mean, look at it this way. I know, you know, I know you like Street Fighter and I like StarCraft, and they are competitive games. So one of the things that I did when I gave my talk on evangelical atheism, is sort of compare, arguing for your side, whatever it may happen to be, and I welcome conservatives to argue with me.
As always,
But what compare that to playing a competitive game where, you know, the stakes may be who's actually right and who's got the truth, but the tactics are very similar to playing a symmetrical game where both sides are deciding which way to deploy their forces or whatever,
right.
Do you want to jump behind the person and throw them in the case of the Street Fighter,
sure.
Or do you just want to sit there making jabs and wear them down over time?
Right.
And what you need to do if you want to get really good at a game is you need to pay attention to people who are better than you. And you need to imitate them. And so, you notice that the people who say don't be a dick are often the same people on the other side who are, you know, saying liberals are traitors.
Right.
And then they pretend, oh, I'm just giving you helpful advice about how to be effective.
Right.
The way to be effective, in direct conflict is to emulate people on the other side who are effective.
Right.
So I think being a dick is a good idea because it works. But I mean, you shouldn't be so focused. You shouldn't be so focused on just the tactics that you lose sight of the fact that ultimately you're trying to figure out, you know, you're trying to come up with a reasonable conclusion about who's right based on actual evidence.
Right. Well, we're going to need to draw down a little bit. But what I am very much interested in is, we were talking about this before, about, oh, there's a few political persuasions where you see very few of them as self-described atheists.
Right.
But there is a strange bump in libertarianism, and I know that you've taken it as one of your personal causes to go after objectivism. And I'm wondering in your mind, given the fact that in the Ayn Rand legacy, there's this very strong anti-theism. I think it's nearly anti-theistic. And how do we, as if we're atheist activists, do we reconcile this? Because I think at least my opposition to being an objectivist to objectivism is, on some levels, it would be really hard for me to want to be friends with someone who had such a low opinion of me and everyone else and people who they saw weren't as capable as them. So how do you take a camp that some people find objectionable? Objecting to objectivism, I believe. How do you take that, and how do we? Should we be building those two together, or what's the strategy?
See, I don't necessarily think that all my allies have to be atheists, or that all atheists have to be my allies. I have reasonable Christian friends. Oh, that's okay. Well, some of my best friends are Christians. Right? I'm not racist at all against Christians. No. I would rather hang out with a Christian who is generally rational and accepts science along with accepting this God thing than I would hang out with an atheist who is, let's say, a dick, but but for reasons of having the same kind of stubbornness that I don't like in fundamentalism.
Sure.
And I don't want to repeat this line, which I think is dumb, that some people say, oh, atheists are just the flip side of, yeah, of fundamentalists. Yeah. But I do want to say that fundamentalism is a phenomenon that's like perpendicular to belief in God or not belief in God. Mm. You know, you can be... Well, okay, for example, Christians and Muslims are in conflict with each other a lot.
Right.
And I read a book by Chuck Colson that attempts to put the atheists in the Muslim camp just because they're both enemies.
Okay.
And you know, so he's trying to say they both come from the same place. And I'm saying that he's looking at the wrong axis because, you know, my opinion is that extreme commitment to stuff you can't prove is the problem.
Right.
And I'm all for extreme commitment to stuff that is demonstrated, which is why I mock 9/11 truthers.
Right.
But I mean, it's
hard to get to
Christian,
this point, right? Because
sorry.
I'm sort of talking about from the perspective of atheist activism at large.
Yeah.
Those who are objectivists who take mm-hmm. who take that part at least seriously. I know there's sometimes it can be kind of strange. We were going over looking at one of the objectivist meetups, and they made you sign like a loyalty pledge before you could go to the meeting or speak at the meeting. Yeah,
or I don't know.
Yeah, but you know, other than the fact that there's these other things that may make us just averse to being on common ground socially, is that warranted? Should we be trying to make those alliances,
Also, you know, there are atheist libertarians that I do respect a lot for their atheism, even if not for their libertarianism, like Penn Jillette.
Right. But he's not an objectivist, though.
No, but he's an extreme libertarian.
Right.
And he frequently describes his own point of view as the nut point of view, just to, you know, just to be silly and sort of divert attention when his views are actually nutty.
Right.
But, you know, and he's also very good at being a dick in pursuit of truth.
Yeah.
But what I find about reasonable people is that they can find a point of view where they disagree on, and they can argue about it loudly with each other. And this, you can confirm this for me, this happens a lot at atheist meetings, that people who agree on certain things will... You know, if they're atheists and they're used to being contrarian anyway, they'll hunt down the minor thing that they disagree on, and then they'll spend the entire meeting, for half an hour arguing over this one thing.
Right.
But then the other thing that happens is that after that argument, they'll leave and they'll be like, you know, same time next week?
Yeah.
You got it, buddy. Whereas... Okay, I have parents-in-law or future parents-in-law who are Christian, and I wanted to have this sort of conversation with them where I was like, you know, let's go at it, slam bang, but then let's be friends at the end of it. And almost right away I ran into, you're a bad person.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you can't have an argument at that point. I mean, there's no point because everything you say is going to be colored through the lens of you're a bad person. I don't want, you know, I'm not inclined to even consider anything you say, which I think political arguments with other reasonable atheists, even Republican atheists, tend to work really well for me because I can sense when people on the other side are thinking about what I say and trying to think of serious ways to counter it rather than just ways to rationalize not listening.
Right, right. What about those people who follow you and Matt Dillahunty dogmatically? People who don't actually use their rational toolkit, people who don't actually show their work, right? They're not really going through the motions. They're just saying, I really like what Richard Dawkins says, and I really like what Hitchens says.
Right.
How do you fall on that in terms of, so people who are part of the ACA, who really, they're sheepish, you know, they probably go there because they like commiserating, but they don't, you know, they don't, they're probably not arriving at it in the, from being actual skeptics, from going, finding and seeing what's wrong with it and arriving mm-hmm. at it. These can be allies of ours, but they are believing the right things for the wrong reasons from our perspective.
Well, that seems kind of paradoxical, because if they're following what we say slavishly, and I don't know if there are a lot of those people, although I'd love to have more minions.
Yeah.
But I mean, if what they're doing is following our point of view slavishly, and if what we're telling them to do, is think critically and not follow anyone slavishly, then they have to follow, you know, then they have to resolve those two things in their own minds. And to me, that is the most important thing, is try to gather all the evidence and don't put too much stock in what any one schmuck like me says.
Right. But you can appreciate that. Hitchens and Dawkins coming along in the past two or three years has made quite a few people who are kind of just, I think it's more anti-theism, really, of people who like the idea of, well, yeah, fuck the, you know, the stupid Christians, and like, yeah, we like it when they talk shit about, you know, people.
I think it's a good start that they're listening to Dawkins instead of Pat Robertson.
Right.
And I think that once they're in, there will be opportunities to argue with those people and then embarrass them if they don't know what they're talking about. And that's really the point of head-to-head combat.
Right.
It reminds me of that scene in Life of Brian where he says, "You don't need me to, you don't need a leader. Yes, we don't need a leader. You're all individuals. Yes, we're all individuals."
Well, I think that's about as much time as we're going to have. Russell, thanks again for joining us. It was
Thank
a pleasure, as always.
Thank you for having
always.
Me.
And we'll see all you guys later. Check out the website and have a good day.
Bye.